More than a decade ago, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Southeast Region launched an innovative carbon sequestration program working with energy companies. The agency's biologists were looking for creative ways to restore native wildlife habitats across the lower Mississippi Valley, which were once home to nearly 25 million acres of bottomland hardwood and now hold roughly 5 million acres. Today, working with our partners, we've added 40,000 acres of land to our National Wildlife Refuge system, restored a total of 80,000 acres, and planted more than 22 million native hardwood trees. All that is expected to sequester more than 33 million metric tons of carbon. We get the wildlife habitat, and our partners reserve the carbon credits. It's a win-win, and Pete Jerome is among our leaders on this issue, and one of several working to expand this work and the partnerships across the country.
I'm Pete Jerome. I'm a refuge supervisor for National Wildlife Refuges along the Atlantic coast, also Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands.
Pete, tell us a little bit about carbon sequestration. First, the name. Where did carbon sequestration come from?
You ask what carbon sequestration is. Carbon sequestration is the ability of taking ambient atmospheric carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere through some means or method and lock it up so it's no longer available in the atmosphere. And the reason we want to do that is CO2 in the atmosphere is a major contributor to global warming. Well, the first time I heard the term carbon sequestration was about 10 years ago now when I was supervisor on refuges along the lower Mississippi River. And at that time, there was initial thought and speculation on the part of some utility companies and other energy consumers about what would eventually become a regulatory environment related to carbon emissions into the atmosphere. For those that were future looking, they realized that projects that were developed that could capture carbon, which is just another way of saying carbon sequestration, capture carbon from the atmosphere, might at some point in time receive some sort of credit or recognition. And in fact, those projects are referred to as carbon offset projects. The idea is that these projects then would offset emissions that utility companies have as part of their ongoing operations and reduce the amount of emissions that they would be limited to at some future point in time.
And so in this case, the method for pulling carbon out of the air is trees.
There's a lot of different ways of doing it. Mm-hmm. From a biological standpoint, we're focusing on what we call habitat restoration or tree planting so that over a long period of time, 100 years or more, we'll be able to capture this ambient carbon dioxide and take it out of the atmosphere.
So let me get it straight. Basically, if you have, say, a utility company offers to contribute some money, then the Fish and Wildlife Service will act as a broker, basically, to allow them to buy trees and plant them on our land? Is that how that's...
Well, it's even more simple than that. Okay. The utility companies are doing these projects that involve buying land, planting trees, and donating those lands and trees to the National Wildlife Refuge System to be managed over time eventually as a mature bottomland hardwood forest. In the hopes, the expectations by the company is that eventually they'll get some recognition as part of their emissions offset at some point in time. But at this point in time, it's all voluntary.
Well, can you give us an example of projects that you've done here in the Southeast?
We've done several projects. I'm not sure what the number is, but the number of acres that we have restored to bottomland hardwood forest is over 80,000 acres, and 40,000 acres of land have been bought, restored, and donated to the National Wildlife Refuge System. So 40,000 acres of land and 80,000 acres of restored forest.
Wow, that sounds pretty impressive. Where do you see this program going? What's the future of it?
Well, that's a good question. There's probably other people that can answer that question better than I can. But if you look at the Kyoto protocols and other efforts in Europe and Australia and elsewhere, It appears that the United States will be headed towards some sort of cap on emissions and then some sort of mechanism for trading carbon credits. If that becomes a reality, then these carbon offset projects will have a value, whatever the market bears, and there may be more interest or not. We don't know. It's all driven by economic considerations, price. So really, what it really gets down to is the projects we've done so far have been sort of speculative on the part of the companies. Once we have a cap and trade bill in place and the price of carbon is fixed, it'll become more clear from a company standpoint whether these projects are going to be economically viable for them to enter into, as opposed to other carbon sequestration investments that they could pursue.
I seem to recall that some of the folks were setting up the Travelocity program that would allow Go Zero to basically offset their carbon footprints by donating or having a portion of their plane tickets go into this fund to actually plant trees. Does that look like a program that's kind of taken off, no pun intended?
Well, the Conservation Fund does have a program, and it is called Go Zero. And basically what it is, it's a fund that they have set up whereby they solicit donations from any number of companies, and it's a wide range of companies, like Travelocity you mentioned. It could be outdoor companies or utility companies, car automotive companies, just any company that is interested in trying to offset its carbon footprint. In other words, take environmental responsibility for the carbon that is consumed by the operations of their company. And those carbon credits are actually retired. Those are not, under the Go Zero program, going to be considered tradable credits.
And that's being done right now, where? South Carolina, right?
We've partnered with the Conservation Fund on several refuges in southeast Louisiana. We've done some projects. We've done a project at PD, National Wildlife Refuge in North Carolina, and also Santee and National Wildlife Refuge in South Carolina.
That's great. Where's the next project coming? What's up in the future?
Well, we're continuing to complete a very large project that has had a number of sponsors and partners over the last 5 years, and that's at Tensaw National Wildlife Refuge. It's been an 11,000-acre project. Several partners have been involved. The Trust for Public Lands, Entergy, which is a utility company in Louisiana, Volkswagen has been involved. Because that was such a large project, it involved many partners to basically underwrite the whole acquisition purchase of 11,000 acres and the reforestation. But we hope to have that completed within a year. And so then all 11,000 acres will be managed as part of the Tensaw National Wildlife Refuge.
What else haven't we covered? What did we miss?
The future of carbon sequestration as it relates to the restoration of native natural habitats. So far, we've been limited to restoring bottomland hardwood forests. What we really would like to be able to see if we can expand that into tall grass prairie, or Pocosin wetlands, or tropical dry forest, and expand this program to even address more different kinds of habitats and other regions in the Fish and Wildlife Service. It'd be pretty exciting if we could put together the right kind of partnerships to foster that.
What are some of the companies that are involved with carbon sequestration projects, some of the partners with the Fish and Wildlife Service?
The big companies that we've worked with are American Electric Power. American Electric Power did one of the first projects at Catahoula National Wildlife Refuge, and that was an 18,000-acre project. Entergy, which I mentioned earlier, is a utility company out of Louisiana. We've done projects with Entergy at Red River National Wildlife Refuge, and I mentioned Tensaw River National Wildlife Refuge. And then a consortium of power companies that operate under the name of Power Tree and Utility Tree, and that That includes probably 40 different utility companies that basically have come together to do these projects and then divide up whatever benefits they accrue.
So the land that these trees are planted on, what was there before?
Mostly soybeans and agriculture lands.
A lot of the soy was planted in substandard habitat areas that probably shouldn't have been cleared to start
with. Yeah, that's true. I mean, most of these were marginal farmlands, and that's why they're excellent prospects for restoring native bottom and hardwood forests, which was what was there originally.
There you go. Gotcha. And then this will be useful for the public, as they'll be able to go and utilize it for hunting or fishing opportunities or bird watching or anything else, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
This has been Tom McKenzie with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Southeast Region Media Relations. Thank you for joining us.